welcome to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Radio, licensed in Bella Vista, California, and transmitting from Round Mountain. Here we explore the lives of triumphant humans who endure life's persistent challenges. Our guests are driven by passion and inspiration and live with a compelling sense of purpose. Their persistence, perseverance, are brought on by tragic episodes or by wonderfully cradled lives. But for whatever reason, guests will openly share their innermost feelings and beliefs that fuel their works. Please listen to these inspirational, triumphant human stories. And yes, I am Henry Cuenca. Today's guest was raised in a small, rural Northern California community. When she was old enough to think of her future, Tara simply wanted to help people. Her family, mother, father, and brother were steadfast introverts who also tended towards the shy spectrum of verbal expression. This trait remains deeply rooted in our guest. Her brother set a level of academic excellence, leaving Tara feeling as if she was always struggling to be as good or as good enough. A significant dose of combined with wanting acceptance may have contributed to her anxiety. From her parents, Tara learned family and marriage were very important. Hard work and getting an education was simply known but seldom discussed. Her father's advice to Tara and her future husband to live together and live it as a trial run. Shocked and dismayed, her mother, a woman of high Christian values, his concern simply she would not complete college as he did not want her to end up working for $1.25 an hour at McDonald's. Well, they got married anyway. Tara was drawn to God in many periods throughout her life, beginning with two significant moments in the third and fourth grade when a classmate's mother died and later during a conversation with a friend who introduced her to fundamental Christianity theology over the years, exposed to and a rejection of fear-based theology. Finally, led to Tara becoming passionate and spiritually led life. And now, Tara Macy is the pastor of the United Methodist Church in Shasta Lake City. Pastor Tara Macy, welcome to today's show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, you know, Tara, I've never had a minister, pastor, priest on the show, so you are my first. And because our show is about passion and inspiration, I can't really quite think of anything that would be more passionate and inspirational than a member of the cloth. So I doubly welcome you to my show.
No pressure.
Good for you. Tara, why don't we launch today's session by telling us, giving us an overview of your life as a pastor.
Well, I'm actually bivocational, so I have two careers. So mm-hmm. My life as a pastor also has to intertwine as my life as a speech pathologist mm-hmm. in a school district. So mm-hmm. I'm technically only a pastor a quarter of the time. Mm-hmm. That's my appointment mm-hmm. from the conference.
Well, that's a good
quarter
start.
Time, right?
Yeah,
it's plenty.
Sure.
So my week looks like balancing work that I'm committed to at the school, as well as sermon prep and visiting people, creating the worship services, and then somehow finding some time in there to also rest and listen and do laundry and things like that.
Like lead a normal life?
Right. Well, I wouldn't go that far, but yes. So pastoring was never, ever something I anticipated doing. it has been a career that's surprised me in its presence. Mm-hmm. I've felt kind of a calling into ministry. Maybe I have felt it for many, many years and was afraid of what I was going to be called to do, mm-hmm. so didn't pursue it. But somehow circumstances have aligned, mm-hmm. and I've been pastoring full-time, quarter-time,
mm-hmm. well, you know,
for almost 2 years yeah. now. So.
But you have a full-time responsibility for your congregation.
Exactly.
So it's right. for our context, it's full-time.
Exactly.
Okay. So tell us more about your work with the church and your congregation.
My church is a small church, mm-hmm. and it's primarily a church with retired congregants. Mm-hmm. So part of my work is to fit into what they need as far as worship style, mm-hmm. what they need in regards to visits. I do have a congregation member who's not able to get out of her house, so part of my routine is to visit her. And then also to try to expand their vision of what the church can be, mm-hmm. so that we can grow and that we can reach mm-hmm. people in the community that are really craving a family, a spiritual family. Mm-hmm. But it sometimes is challenging to try to get out into the community.
Mm-hmm. What would be the biggest challenge preventing you from doing that? Is it a time situation?
Partly time, partly able-bodied, willing, quantity of workers. Mm-hmm. We have great members, mm-hmm. but we are so small that it's hard to think of doing anything like providing regular meals or something. Mm-hmm. We just don't quite have that base of people to draw from. And realistically, these are folks who've given all through their life, mm-hmm. and they're at the point where they would maybe not want to have to be as not as much exertion. It's not mm-hmm. that they don't want to give mm-hmm. or participate, mm-hmm. it's just, you know, when it comes to like, hey, let's move some tables, move some chairs, cook some dinners, wash some dishes, we don't have maybe that level of energy mm-hmm. at the moment. Mm-hmm. And then to try to reach out and bring in some people who might be looking to follow the same spiritual path or looking to help the community in the same way, mm-hmm. to even just let them know that our church is there mm-hmm. is part of our challenge.
Sure.
To
well,
get
that's
into the community.
But isn't that basically true for mostly all churches and all denominations?
Yes.
I mean,
yeah,
you know, Christianity, I can speak. You know that there has been tremendous over the past 15 years, tremendous losses mm-hmm. of practicing religious people in both denominations, Catholic and Protestant. Just enormous millions have withdrawn.
Yes.
And
yes.
that makes that challenge triple worth, you know. So, mm-hmm. and I think that's a major challenge that all churches face, right? Completely.
Yeah.
So, do you go to the hospital and make calls on some of your
when that is needed?
I know you don't like. Yes. I know you don't like hospitals.
Right? Not a fan of the hospitals, but yes, I've gone. That my first week on the job, mm-hmm. I visited people in the hospital and mm-hmm. had someone pass away and had a memorial service. Mm-hmm. So, and then throughout the years, we've had, you know, someone who would have a grandchild in the hospital, and they would ask me to go visit. And uh-huh. I would do that.
Sure.
Having a smaller congregation actually there isn't quite that same load.
Sure.
Which
right.
is helpful.
So it's at 25-75% split of your time.
Right.
Right. So could you tell us, I mean, you are not an ordained minister.
Correct.
Yeah. Could you explain to our listeners within the Methodist Church, I'm sure it has its own implications and its own definition, but could you explain to our listeners, you are a licensed pastor.
Yeah.
And could you explain to us the difference between an ordained minister and what you serve in your capacity?
So in the United Methodist Church, there's kind of two ways into serving in pastoral ministry.
Mm-hmm.
One track would be the ordination track, which typically involves going to seminary, getting your master's degree. And then there's a long process where you work with a committee on ordained ministry it's kind of like internships and supervised work. And there's steps along the way. It's mm-hmm. They do a very, very long process in order to assure that the people who are ordained are safe and well vetted.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one route.
Mm-hmm.
Another route into ministry, which is the route I've taken, is called licensed local pastors. And mm-hmm. that's often what you find people who are in my situation, where they're middle-aged, feeling a call, and maybe don't have the means to go to seminary. Mm-hmm. I can't quit my day job right at the moment and just go to seminary for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a process through which you become educated through the church.
Mm-hmm.
This last summer I went to licensing school, and that was after I'd already done training to become a lay minister.
Mm-hmm.
And then the licensing school prepares you to become a licensed local pastor, assuming that you've passed your psychological evaluation mm-hmm. and you've, you know, met the requirements of the board.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, now I'm looking at the next 5 years of going to school in the summer for 4 classes each year. So mm-hmm. there's 20 classes. They call that course of study.
Mm-hmm.
In order for me to maintain myself as a licensed local pastor.
It's like a continuing education type of thing.
Yeah, and it's kind of like seminary courses, just mm-hmm. maybe backed off a little from mm-hmm. the rigor of mm-hmm. master's degree mm-hmm. courses.
But don't you have a master's of divinity?
No, I have a master's in speech pathology, and I have a master's in educational counseling.
Okay.
So.
But you have attended school, religious type, a preparation school.
Right.
Yeah.
So I, what they call it was conference lay minister training.
Mm-hmm.
And that was essentially 80 hours worth of training.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to allow someone to be a lay minister, which mm-hmm. I was. And I served my church once a month as a preacher for mm-hmm. about a year and a half mm-hmm. before I became a licensed local pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And then through that process, I connected with the Board of Ordained Ministry, mm-hmm. and they like to have somebody in that position of serving a church and working with them for a year mm-hmm. before they approve you to go on to licensing school.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was another probably 80 hours
mm-hmm.
of training.
Well, the Methodist Church is traditional. I mean, it's a core mm-hmm. religion, right?
Right.
So I'm sure that they know what they're doing by mm-hmm. setting up the procedures for
yes.
right. So,
yeah.
I tell me what is it that brings the most joy, or satisfaction and gratification to you, being a pastor?
Well, there's so many things I enjoy about it. Actually,
oh, I love that. I love that smile.
I love the study. I never feel like I have enough time to really get my sermons as polished as I want them,
mm-hmm.
but I really like the study
mm-hmm.
and
the theology.
Of it. You know, I definitely would have gone to get a master's if it was, you know, cheap and local, but
right.
it's neither cheap nor local, so we're doing other coursework instead.
Uh-huh.
But I also really like the one-on-one conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So those pastoral counseling, the the times that you get to talk about spirituality and how it looks in somebody's everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
So sitting down with somebody for an hour or two, mm-hmm. and hearing about their lives, mm-hmm. is always just fascinating to me.
Well, you could co-chair this program that I have.
Right. It's kind of like what you do.
Yeah, right.
Except I'm usually in the other chair, which is my preferred spot.
So you get a great deal of satisfaction in sitting down and talking to people, and they're kind of laying mm-hmm. out their life or their issues or what
right.
have you, right?
And if I can listen and they feel heard, or they feel somehow
touched,
supported, or touched, that's awesome.
What is the most difficult part of being a pastor?
So probably the same answer. For both of my answers. For me, because I am an introvert, mm-hmm. making connections with people can be the challenge. Mm-hmm. And it's not because, you know, introverts actually do really well one-on-one, mm-hmm. and listening, that's awesome. I can do that.
You are a good listener.
But making that first phone call, making phone calls to people, that's painful for me.
Well, that's sales number one.
Right. And I don't have staff. So, you know, I talked to my mentor. He talks about having kind of a similar issue, but he's at a larger church, so he has staff that can help him. And
he'll
say,
absolutely.
Here, call these people, set up appointments.
Yeah, understood.
Once the appointments
you got to do it all. There's no question about
right.
that. Yeah.
So that's, I feel like that's a challenge uh-huh. for me.
Tell us about your prayer life.
Well, it's scattered.
It's okay.
I really like the idea of praying without ceasing.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, I believe that our lives are prayers.
Mm,
and so that everything we do uh-huh. is a prayer.
Well, you're correct. I see that. Mm-hmm.
But intentional prayer, I have a couple of practices that I do.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of listening. So meditative prayer,
mm-hmm.
I try to get, you know, 10 to 20 minutes a night, if
mm-hmm.
I can,
mm-hmm.
of just being in the presence of God.
Mm-hmm.
Just I always liken it to sitting on a bench with my best friend. We don't
mm-hmm.
have to talk.
Mm-hmm.
We're just enjoying each other's presence.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, that's a large part of my prayer life. Intercessory prayers, praying for other people. A lot of that happens kind of on the fly as people come up or as I get the phone calls or
sure.
the emails. And then I try when I go to bed to always close my day with a prayer of thanks and also, you know, praying for people.
Mm-hmm.
I've started a practice. I started back in August when something about the being a licensed local pastor mm-hmm. in the Methodist Church that now allows me to bless the sacrament of communion.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas as a lay minister, I had to have the elements blessed by an elder and I could serve them. So when I was starting to look at communion and reading, it had just happened that in August, the scripture was all about bread. And so
mm-hmm.
I thought, you know what, let's really go in deep
mm-hmm.
and let's have communion every week.
And
I decided to bake the bread.
Mm-hmm.
And so my practice now is Wednesday, which is my kind of my church day, my sermon prep day.
Mm-hmm.
I make the communion bread,
oh.
but when I'm kneading it,
mm-hmm.
I'm kneading
mm-hmm.
in the names of my congregants.
Oh, beautiful.
And so whether it's a special concern or not,
yeah.
I have a list of names
so
I don't miss them. And that's really become a powerful time
do you
for
take
me.
Do you take outsiders?
Oh, absolutely.
Tara, that's a beautiful thought that you're alluding to, but we do have to take a short break right now.
Okay.
So we're listeners, we're going to be back in a very short time here. Thank you. You are listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Supported Radio. And I'm Henry Cuenca, and I'm speaking here with Pastor Tara Macy, a pastor for the Methodist United Church. Tara, I know that there's certainly, even though that this may appear to be, I hate to use the word part-time job, but you receive the full blessings that essentially of a very spiritual person, at least from me, and I'm sure you. Many others. But I know that one of the criteria that you got that maybe drove you into this, and correct me if I'm wrong, was against fear-based theology. Mm-hmm. Could you explain that to us, please?
I can try.
Okay.
At least I can give you my perception.
Well,
of
that's
it.
All. That's so all that's, that we want. Yeah.
I find that in our society, Christianity tends to be fear-based, and what I mean by that is that perception of, if you don't believe the same way I do, you're going to go to hell. Mm-hmm. And I grew up kind of with that idea. And sometimes it was preached, and sometimes it's just kind of out in the ether of the society, right? Mm-hmm. You can talk to people who aren't Christians, and that's their perception. Christians
yeah.
will think.
Well,
that.
There's a lot of Christians mm-hmm. that claim to be really hardcore Christians and believe that way.
Right.
We
yeah.
had neighbors that were killed by Christians.
Wow.
Because they were doing something wrong.
Wow.
Here in this town.
Mm.
Two doors down from us. Two were killed.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah. So when I went back to church as an adult, I mean, I grew up in a church as a teen, and then kind of took a break during college. And when I went back, I got into a study group that kind of had that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a lot of that fear, is that I am not good enough, that I'm either not going to do the right thing. I'm not going to believe the right thing, because it seems like it comes down to belief. You have to have this exact belief, or say this precise sentence mm-hmm. in order to be saved.
Right.
And I use that in quotation marks.
Right.
And it bothered me, because most of my family, my husband or, you know, other people in my family, by their definition, would not be saved, would not be mm-hmm. going to hell.
Right.
But somehow that's good news.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what? Okay, so if I get to heaven and they're not there,
somebody missed, good.
Yeah,
somebody missed the bus.
Or if I just somehow miraculously forget my whole human existence, and so I don't have the pain of missing them, then what's the point of this life? It didn't work. And it honestly made me sick to my stomach.
Really?
I would go to churches and they would talk about this, and I would just feel nauseous. But what it did was it pushed me to go into the Bible, mm-hmm. to go into the scripture. Well, where does it say you have to believe this way before you die, or else you're... And as I looked and read and had more questions, I moved mm-hmm. to a different town, and I ended up at the Methodist Church in Reading.
Mm-hmm.
And the pastor at the time had his whole membership class based on, like, answering these questions, mm-hmm. like, what is hell, or, mm-hmm. you know, what is salvation, all of these things.
Did you have Methodist training when you grew up? Was
no, okay. No. There was a Methodist church in Fall River.
But that wasn't the training essentially that your mother, because your mother was a very spiritual lady.
Right, but we attended a interdenominational
church
in town.
Mm-hmm.
but this the church I went to as an adult was a Methodist church. Okay. But then
that's
study
where you sprouted.
Group, right. And then we toured other churches there for a while. But so anyway, it essentially put me on this quest, and it was as if I was picked up out of this question from this, like I was at the starting point of the race and dropped onto the finish line.
Wow.
Because all of a sudden,
you got
it was
the
like,
message.
Here's all these answers. Yep. No, you don't have to struggle through all of this.
Yeah, I
now,
get it.
There was still growth after that.
Sure.
And it was quite some time, I think, before I really believed. You know, we say God is love, but it took a while for me to really absorb that
and it.
Believe it
right.
for myself and then therefore for all others.
Very interesting. You know, here in my show, we try to connect the dots of people's lives and try to line up the reasons and the causes that they end up doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So you were born into a, you know, a really good family, mother, father, and you say that that you were very, very, the whole family is very introverted, and that a lot of consternation was, or issues were avoided because there was not a lot of challenging. So maybe you could explain that a little bit better than I'm trying to.
Well, I think now, you know, as I've gone, especially since I have a degree in a field that specializes in communication, and then a second degree that's in counseling, which is communication. I, you know, looking back, I see a lack of communication. And it's not that there was a lot of friction, but I could see, you know, I could see when my dad would do something and my mom would maybe not see eye to eye with him, but she wouldn't necessarily verbalize that, but you could see her kind of stuffing it down in.
Right.
And I don't know if there was a behind the scenes, like did they have a conversation later on the night or whatever.
Right.
But as a kid, I didn't really see that. And nobody in my family really expressed emotions or talked about their ideas or their feelings a lot. And so that's been a challenge for me to grow out of.
Are your parents still living?
Yes, Tara? They are.
Or you communicate?
Oh, yeah.
Well, each family, of course, develops their own dynamics, right? I don't think what you're describing as your parents is particularly unusual.
Right.
Right? Right?
No.
It just isn't. But from what I understand, your mother was a very, very hard worker, very busy. She was a teacher. She volunteered. A homemaker, funny, great sense of humor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right?
Right.
So that sounds like a pretty strong personality to me, somebody that is right. striving for good and for better for not only herself but, you know, community. Tell us more about your mother.
I wish I had half the energy she still has. she is that super super energetic, very creative, very giving. But I think when you think about tied in with communication, I think keeping harmony and keeping peace within the family was kind of the highest priority. And so I think maybe she spent a lot of her life trying to help the family. Either.
You know, that's not a bad objective or a bad aim.
Right. No,
you know,
it's not.
Really isn't.
No.
Yeah.
I think she's a saint.
Well,
in
that's,
some ways.
Yeah.
So, and you know,
you picked up a lot from her, obviously. You learned from her.
Well, I hope so.
What is the biggest influence you think that she left with you?
Probably that idea of working for harmony. you know, in our wedding book, we had people writing messages to us.
Sure.
And I remember one of the things that she wrote was, you know, the typical don't go to bed angry, mm-hmm. but be the first to apologize.
Well, that's a good start, I'll tell you.
Yeah. And
absolutely.
So you think about that is, to me, I mean, that's kind of the Christian goal of dying to self and putting others first, is right. to set your own ego aside, set your yeah. own agenda aside, and serve another.
You know, if there were no religion at all, I think that'd still be a pretty good rule.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
right. No mm-hmm. question. You know, Tara, I want to talk about your father and your brother.
Okay.
But I want you to think about it, but we need to take another break.
Okay.
So we're going to be back real, real shortly. If you're just tuning in, this is KKRN 88.5 Community Radio from Round Mountain, California. And this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show and listener-supported radio. And I am Henry Cuenca, and my guest today is Pastor Tara Macy. Tara, before the break, we said we were going to talk about your father and your brother. Let's talk about your father. What did your father do?
He was a mechanic. He mm-hmm. owned Hank's Tune-Up in Fall River Mills.
Oh, his name was Henry? Or
Hank.
Hank,
yep.
Okay.
And so he owned his business and was a hard worker. Mm-hmm. I remember, you know, the idea of vacations was a challenge mm-hmm. because he was the only source of income for mm-hmm. most of my growing up. Mm-hmm. And so when you're self-employed...
Doubly difficult.
That's, yeah, very much mm-hmm. so. But he worked hard around home too on his weekends. He mm-hmm. wasn't the type to, you know, sit around and watch football. He might have enjoyed a game mm-hmm. once or twice, but he was always working in the garden or cutting firewood or doing something on the property. So
I'm a very hard worker.
Yeah.
But he wasn't particularly... religious, was he?
Not at all.
Oh, not at all.
No. The line I remember from him is, I went to church once and I got married. So that was like, I don't think he went again until I got married.
Well, Tara, this is very interesting. You mm-hmm. you are a missionary for God, but it didn't necessarily start right. in the family.
Right.
That's sort of interesting. I find it
kind
interesting.
Of one-sided.
Yeah.
And I married into a similar situation where my husband's mom was identified as a Christian and his dad did not.
Mm-hmm.
And yet my dad's mom did go to church. Mm-hmm. And so I would see her and her husband doing daily devotions, mm-hmm. and when
this is one of your grandparents,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. yeah, my dad's mom, and so when we would be at their house, we would say grace. But then my mom, who is the religious one of the two, her parents were not.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a whole mixture mm-hmm. in my family, which you know, when then you come down to the who gets into heaven or hell, if you wanted to do that question, gets.
Right.
Challenging.
Well, if not anything, it stimulated your mind to think about these things.
Yes,
right,
absolutely.
Yeah. So we talked in the opening about your brother. He's a very very intelligent
yes.
guy,
yes.
person, right? And that there was, you know, some struggling, I guess, that maybe through a childhood. Rivalry, you know, had something to do with your basic personality.
He's 3 years older than me.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I remember in elementary school being the little sister and seeing him and saying, you know, wanting to say hi to him and being the typical older brother, like, don't talk to me.
Blew you off, huh? Yeah.
And then, you know, as he entered the teens or tweens, you know, 12, 13, 14, I think like most kids do, they start to want to build themselves up by putting mm-hmm. somebody else
oh,
down.
Yeah, right.
And
sure.
So I was the easy target. Uh-huh. I was the little sister who, you know, couldn't do, you know.
You couldn't do anything.
If I sang, right. He would tease me about my voice, which there may be truth to that. But
well, he couldn't have teased you about your hair or your dresses.
Well, I'm sure he probably teased me about both of those, actually.
Well, a lot of brothers yeah. do that
right.
sort of
so,
thing.
Yeah, and he, you yeah. know, so there were times when he would, I remember Christmas time when he would spend his allowance money and buy me a present.
Oh.
So
No IOUs?
Not till later. He got uh-huh. very creative and wanted to make things for people, so sometimes we got IOUs because
well, that's a pretty creative approach, quite honestly.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
I see his creativity.
Yeah, and he was always taking on, like, for any class project or like a gift, mm-hmm. his ideas were larger than what needed to be done for mm-hmm. that particular thing. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes he was overshooting, you know, the enormity of the project was huge for him mm-hmm. and small for the rest.
Oh, so he was
right.
was a step
and
ahead.
So he, right. that was, I was his little sister. So yeah. of course
the
I need
post.
To get A's. He got A's. Of course I should be, you know, that type
you,
of
you know,
thing.
It's, excuse me, you and your brother. Mm-hmm. Are highly educated. I mean, you mm-hmm. hold a couple of master's mm-hmm. degrees, right?
Yeah.
And your brother's a PhD?
Yes.
Right. And it's interesting to know that this really wasn't promoted in the family, right? I mean,
I don't remember it ever verbally
that, I find
being
that
promoted.
Also, I really find that really interesting as well as to what were the influences yeah. that got you and your brother. He's a PhD. That's mm-hmm. pretty high up.
Mm-hmm.
What were the factors that got you thinking that way without really the ongoing mentioning or supporting or directing by your parents?
I think it must have had to do with something in the early, early years, like get your homework done,
uh-huh.
that type of thing.
Uh-huh.
And it just seems that that was who we were. We were people who would do academics and be successful.
Uh-huh.
And if, you know, you do your homework every night, you read. Later, when we got older, my dad would give us allowances or, you know, when we got cars, say, as long as you can keep your grades up, I'll pay your insurance. But,
mm-hmm.
Maybe we never... I don't know, maybe because we did the diligence of doing homework, we were ready
sure.
to take the tests and do well.
But your father was he went to college, did he not?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what was his discipline?
I am not sure of the exact title,
mm-hmm.
but as a mechanical mm-hmm. person, mm-hmm. It was something in that field.
I see. Your grandparents had some influence
mm-hmm.
over you.
Mm-hmm.
Grandmother, on your mother's side, I guess. What influences did she bring to you?
Well, my grandma on my mother's side was, she was the one that I was born on her birthday. And so we kind of had a special bond. And she also did childcare for me at a very young age,
mm-hmm.
so when my mom was still teaching. So just growing up around her, she was a very warm and nurturing but also fun person. And I think some of those personality traits, I hope, came through into my life.
That was probably because you two watched the Lawrence Welk show.
Well, that's true.
As well.
Danced.
You know, one thing that I just recalled that you had told me about your parents was your father never failed to give your mom a kiss.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
I know. Every morning when he went out to work.
That was it, huh?
Grabbed his lunchbox because she made the lunches and then kiss her goodbye.
I have a note here on my pad that talks about yummy scrummy.
Yummy scummy. Yummy scummy.
I'm not a very good writer, but what is yummy scummy?
Well, our family tends to have its own vocabulary.
Well, they're all families.
I think
do
they
too.
All do, right?
Yeah,
and
right.
So I recently learned where that came from. My dad's mom, who was widowed at a pretty young age, got remarried when I was around 5. Mm-hmm. And apparently that grandpa would compliment a meal by saying it is yummy scummy.
Yummy scummy?
So if it's just yummy, that's good. But you want the yummy scummy.
Oh, okay.
Because that means it's superb.
Well, did you?
And the first time my husband heard my dad say that about my mom's cooking,
right,
he was shocked because it sounded negative.
Well, it kind of does in a way.
Well, the scummy part, yeah, certainly.
Well, did you follow your father's footsteps by eating a pat of butter at
Oh, that was the grandfather.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right?
Ooh, no, he was a dairy farmer, and
well, you would expect that from a dairy
that
farmer.
That was, yeah,
right. So, marriage. What you learned from your parents was that marriage is important,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah.
Can you tell us how that translated to you to your marriage?
Well, growing up, yeah, I did. I saw that connection that they worked together, that, you know, dad always kissed mom goodbye and they teased each other and that type of thing. But somehow in my mind as a teenager, when I saw my friends dating, mm-hmm, and then breaking up and the date, I just couldn't understand it. Mm-hmm. I'd like the point of dating is to get married, that in my mind. Mm-hmm. So I was not planning on dating, mm-hmm, until after I had my master's degree. Mm-hmm. Because I knew I would get a master's degree. I didn't know what, and mm-hmm, I don't know why. But that was my plan. Now, I got married a year after high school.
Did you really?
Best laid plans.
Pretty young bride.
Yes, uh-huh, yes. I was 18. Uh-huh. My husband's 6 years older than me.
Oh,
so that was
a little bit. That's not scandalous. I'm scandalous. That's within range.
No, but, you know, I was dating him in high school, mm-hmm, and he had graduated college. Mm-hmm. So my parents were surprisingly cool about that. As I look back now, we've been married 24 years, so it's worked out, I think.
Oh, that's
so
wonderful. Well, congratulations. Yeah. That's terrific. You know, I want to talk about an interesting point, but I'm going to mention it now, and then we got to take another quick break.
Okay.
But I think this is really interesting. I want to talk about the McDonald talk.
Okay.
And listeners, we're going to take a real short break, but you got to hear this story. Very good. Again, if you're just joining us, this is Henry Cuenca on KKRN FM 88.5 on your dial. And, of course, I'm Henry Cuenca on the Henry Cuenca Radio Show. And my terrific guest today is Pastor Tara Mays. And we're going to talk about the McDonald talk. And why don't you explain the McDonald talk to us?
Well, backing up for a little bit,
sure,
from that, I was dating my husband, Eric, mm-hmm, and we decided we wanted to get married, so we started shopping for rings, and we got the rings and showed the rings to my parents, and Eric didn't really see a necessity for the old-fashioned asking the parent the dad for the daughter.
Eric was your, your husband's name.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So we kind of skipped that part. And so when we had the rings and we were talking about when we might want to get married, at some point we're sitting outside and my dad wants to talk to us. Well, we need to have a talk. And he proceeded to encourage us.
Was you, well, your mother was there?
My mom and him were on one side of the table, yes. And
oh, it was a planned this is a planned presentation.
Sort of. Yeah. Well, I don't know about that, but okay. Yes, he had a goal in mind.
Right.
And so he says, well, why don't you just live together first and, you know, see if it works, because I don't want you to end up getting trapped with a family and quitting college and working at McDonald's for a buck and a quarter an hour. And that buck and a quarter an hour phrase is stuck with us.
Oh,
and we joke about it still.
Sakes.
So, and about that time, I could see my mom almost falling out of her chair, because it's not,
not
the advice
her,
she would have right. preferred. I don't know if she said much of anything, but
so tell me, how what did you and Eric think about that?
Well, we thought that was an interesting thought.
Well, it is an interesting thought.
I had fear, definitely, of ending up having kids mm-hmm. and not finishing school. That was a fear of mine. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't see myself going forward in life without this person beside me.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
And it was like, well, let's get married. That's mm-hmm. it just seemed like the right and logical thing to do.
So it really provided a step for getting married then, that McDonald talk.
Well, I think we were planning on getting married the next
anyway.
Summer, and we would have.
Oh,
so,
gotcha. Right.
Yeah, but it was just one of those funny little.
Yeah, well, I'll never forget the McDonald talk. I'll tell you. You had growing up, you had said that intuitively, you just wanted to help people.
Mm-hmm.
That this was a long term or an inner driven
mm-hmm.
thing that you just wanted to help. But you didn't particularly have a vision for the future.
No.
But you just wanted to help people.
Yeah.
How did that develop?
You know, I was trying to think about that, and I do remember maybe in first or second grade, a vacation Bible school that they had at the Methodist Church in Fall River. And I remember one of the activities that we did was we brought in quarters to put into this little chart. And it was supposed to represent buying turkeys for the hungry in some other country, mm-hmm. essentially. I don't know if it was a heifer project thing or something. But that idea that there are people out there hurting or hungry and I can make a difference, mm-hmm. that somehow impacted me. And then growing up, volunteering was just part of life when I was probably 12 or 13. My mom and I were involved with helping the library in Fall River. They had a volunteer library created. Mm-hmm. And so I remember painting bookshelves and, you know, logging books and things like that. And then later volunteering at the hospital as mm-hmm. a candy striper or whatever you want to call
mm-hmm.
it. So that just helping somebody out, being a mm-hmm. friend to somebody. Mm-hmm.
I can sort of see where your mother's, her activities or things that were important to her,
mm-hmm.
I can see how that kind of rubbed off mm-hmm. on you. I mean, the volunteering.
And my dad actually did that too, in mm-hmm. a subtle way.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have seen him maybe contributing to a specific cause,
mm-hmm.
but you would hear stories when somebody would come into the shop and their car was in disrepair and they didn't have enough money, that he would do what he could to help them out.
Mm-hmm.
So even though he wasn't necessarily going to church or mm-hmm. participating in the Lions Club or something like that, in his own way, I mean, even in the winters, he would get on his tractor and plow driveways
mm-hmm.
miles away from our home mm-hmm. just because that was the neighborhood.
Well, you know,
thing
at the beginning of the show, you expressed you know, that prayer is how we act, right? And that's, I mean,
right.
What better example would there be? So I can see much clearer how your end work was really being channeled and developed by your parents without even talking about it, right?
Right.
Yeah, right. That's really excellent. What was the – I know you used to sell cookies at your dad's What kind of cookies did you make?
Oh, chocolate chip.
Oh, of
except
course.
I did have one customer who wanted chocolate chip cookies without the chocolate chips. So we always made a dozen for him without the chocolate chips. And,
So tell us about that whole experience. You said you don't care to meet people, but you were in sales whether you liked it or not.
Right. I know. Well, I don't know how that came about, but somehow my mom helped me and we would buy the ingredients, we would make the cookies, and I feel like on a Friday or something we would take them to the shop and I would just have my trays of cookies and customers would come in and then they'd start to learn, like the guy who didn't like chocolate chips.
Right.
I'm going to buy some next week. It was probably during the summers, during summer break. And then we'd count our money and I'd pay mom back for all the groceries. And
that was only fair, right?
Yeah, it's a fantastic learning experience.
Yeah, right. And I'm sure you did very well. I had asked you, you know, about childhood heroes. And you said that you didn't really have any, but you did have a poster of Einstein.
Yes.
In your bedroom. Can you recall why you had Einstein?
Well, you know, I did a lot of science and we did a lot of science fairs and that type of thing, and I'm sure I picked it up maybe at the Science Museum in San Francisco probably. I liked his quotes. In fact, I used one of his quotes in my sermon Sunday.
What was it?
It's that you can choose to view life in two ways. Either nothing is a miracle or it's all miracle.
Oh.
I like that.
Yeah.
It's all miracle.
Yeah, I see that perspective.
Yeah.
So you still obviously
still like him.
Yeah. I've read his autobiography, you know, a very, very interesting man. What mentorship did you have? Who's mentored your life, you know, or would you say had a lot to do with mentoring your life?
I would say for sure, especially in the last few years, if you want to pastoring.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Yeah, I've had a couple of pastors in that pastor, the Redding Church, which were huge influences on my theology, on my spirituality. And then, for example, one of them who had moved away when I became pastor here, and within the first week I needed to figure out how to have a memorial service, you know, I called up my friend Rod and said, what do I do? And he gave me fantastic advice, and I've had a wonderful mentor in the current pastor at the Redding Church and others that I've known. There's quite a network of support, actually.
Well, that's wonderful. Did you have any mentors in your earlier years?
You know, I think of the woman, there was a woman named Kim who used to come to the Glen Burn Church. That's the church I went to. And every summer, she would vacation up in Hat Creek, and every summer she would come, and she was very musical. And I always loved music. I didn't have a lot of talent in it, but it spoke to me. And so she would always take time to meet with me as 12 or 13-year-old kid, and we'd get together, and she would play, and we would sing together, and sometimes she would have us sing for church, and she'd take me out to lunch once in a while. And she was in her 30s, probably. So that was just, we actually still have a connection. She and I are still friends.
Good for you.
Yeah.
You're sort of, I can see why people would have a connection. What hobbies do you have?
Oh, goodness. I have enough that I could retire now and never finish. Current hobbies include cello and ukulele and guitar and, well, baking communion bread, kind of.
Well, sure.
I love hiking. I love photography. Mm-hmm. I used to do a lot of crafts, mm-hmm. some crocheting, some knitting, some mm-hmm. counted cross stitch. I dabble. I usually call myself a jack of all trades and master of none, because I like to try out lots of different things. Mm-hmm. I don't have a lot of time for the crafts so much now, mm-hmm. but I'm still taking cello lessons, and my ukulele club that I started back in May is
tell us a little bit about the cello lessons and a little bit about your ukulele.
Okay. Well, I actually started with guitar, and I was in the band at the Reading Church, and I took a few lessons, and mm-hmm. I got better. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's interesting. That's interesting.
That's fascinating. Okay. So I found myself thinking, if I could learn any instrument, I'd like to play the cello. Mm-hmm. And it occurred to me, why not? Mm-hmm. So I rented a cello and started taking cello lessons.
Wow.
And then recently I've picked up the ukulele because I figured what better way to bring joy into the world
than with the ukulele. Tara, we're running short on time, and we have about another minute to go. And I want to ask you, do you think that you are ever going to work to become an ordained minister?
I think I would like to. Mm-hmm. Years ago, I would never, ever have thought I'd be where I am now. Uh-huh. So, I could continue a course of study and do advanced course of study and pursue ordination. Mm-hmm. The challenge is that in the Methodist Church, then if you're ordained, you're saying you're willing to move anywhere. Mm-hmm. And at this moment,
transport you literally anywhere.
Right.
North Dakota.
Well, usually within the conference, but uh-huh. Fresno or Ely or, uh-huh. yeah. Uh-huh. So that's
I have time for one more question.
Okay.
What advice could you give to people? General advice.
General advice. Mm-hmm. I would say living in gratitude. I've been spending all month studying gratitude, wow. and that can change your brain. It can change your health. It's perfect.
That is perfect. Tara, it's been real exciting to have you on our show, and I know our guests really enjoyed hearing you. And I really thank you for putting up with the process that we went through show. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You have been listening to community-supported KKRN 88.5 FM. We are supported by listeners like you and brought to you by volunteers from the community. Are you ready to support your local community radio? To become a listener supporter, go to our website, kkrn.org, and click on the donate button or mail a check to P.O. Box 188, Montgomery Creek, California 96065, or you can call 530-337-1101 to volunteer. Thank you for listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show, where we are in earnest working to make our community and our world a better place. I would love to hear from you, so please send me an email at henry@kkrn.org. Or just pick up the phone and call me at 530-356-9811. Thank you very much for listening.